It's your girl, Christina. This is Overheard at Yoga. So let's crank up the heat and get down, dog.
Now we're recording.
We're on.
We're on. This is a podcast for people who do yoga sometimes.
Yeah, and I've been here before.
And you have been here before.
But not here. You record in a new studio now.
Yeah, our studio likes to move around a lot.
Yeah.
Keeps things fresh.
Yeah.
And interesting. And then when I have repeat guests, I'm always like, you don't know where the location is.
Well, I feel a lot further from you than last time.
Yeah, we were pretty cozy in that tiny little space.
Yeah.
Which is a cool building. It's a workspace building. So there's lots of little offices in there. But pretty sure we got kicked out because we were too loud. So now we're in a bigger place, and I don't have we had any complaints, Travis? Like maybe one?
Not yet for noise, no.
I know coming up the stairs sometimes I'm breathing really heavily and then I complain about the stairs, and there's this one office that's at the top of the stairs and they always leave their door open, and they were in there having a lunch meeting, and me and whoever my guest was that week were like, oh my God, these fucking stairs. Oh, we're going to do a yoga podcast. And we were like, we can't even breathe. And then the guys are just eating their lunch, watching us. We're like, oh crap, sorry, you're having a meeting.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be our space for a while. This is where we're going to stay.
Well, walking in the doors, there was a calculated risk, right?
Yeah.
Like there was the elevator at the end of the hallway,
uh-huh.
And there was the stairs right in front of me.
What'd you do?
Well, I thought to myself, what's the yogi thing to do? Am I going to use my body? Am I going to use the machine?
Are you going to try? Well, you could do sensory deprivation in the elevator.
I guess I didn't experience the elevator. Is it that bad?
Well, they've worked on it a few times, so it makes me feel like it has problems. So I'm a little nervous to use it. And Travis says it's fine. It just freezes up sometimes. No, thank you.
Do we introduce ourselves at some point?
Hi, I'm Christina Braun. This is my podcast. I'm the host. I get to talk about whatever I want. I'm really into yoga, and I'm not perfect. So if you are really into yoga and listening to this, bear that in mind. And then I have a guest on today, which is my good friend, Nick Perner. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Nick Perner. I'm Christina's good friend. We did this once before. I don't remember what we said about our friendship. I think I met you. I think I met you at some kind of workshop in the Hollywood Yoga Studio.
The
space,
Acro workshop.
At an Acro workshop,
mm-hmm.
probably 8 years ago. It was before I was teaching, and I've been teaching for 8 years now.
It was before you were teaching,
yeah.
Really?
It was before I was teaching, yeah.
Barely, just before you were teaching.
Probably, yeah.
Uh-huh. And I don't really remember meeting you at that workshop. I was very distracted at that workshop. And we did talk about that, actually, on the last episode.
Did we?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here we are.
What are we doing? What should we talk about today? Let's see how prepared we are.
So I asked to come back on the podcast.
Right, because last time we didn't even get into your Kundalini training or any of that.
I think I was on the podcast about 8 or 9 months ago, last summer sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a lot's happened in my yoga life since. Very happy to share.
Okay, tell us.
So what did we talk about? I don't know. We should have listened to the previous podcast first to know where to pick up.
We'll put that one in the show notes if you want to go back to that one. But we did talk about how you discovered yoga, and your first class was like a chanting class on the beach in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
And so you had a profound experience and you wanted to chase that experience.
Yeah. And recently you and I were meeting with another friend. You know, we had a little like dinner get together, and that same experience came up in conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember if it was you or our other friend asked, what is it that, why are you doing this new Kundalini training?
Yeah.
Like, what do you want to, was that you? Did you ask that?
Yes.
And I said, well, have me back on the podcast.
Uh-huh.
So I did. I had a really profound experience with a weird, chanty meditation thing over a decade ago. And it was one of my first yoga experiences. And it wasn't until years later, doing my own like research online, that I learned that this chanting meditation thing, where I was also moving my hands and fingers around, was kind of a common practice in a lineage of yoga called Kundalini.
So how would you, in the most basic terms, tell someone what is Kundalini yoga?
As I take a sip of water. Kundalini yoga. Well, maybe we could do a little education about lineages of yoga, you and I, just for a minute, right?
Okay.
So because we teach yoga together. And, mm-hmm. So yoga history is pretty complicated.
You for know? Sure.
And we have written records of different yoga practices that date back a couple thousand years. But before that, there's a lot of oral tradition in there too, right? And we have maybe like different time periods we can look at, and the developments of yoga technology over time. And we're very familiar with some of the ideas and other ideas from that long heritage of, you know, maybe 4,000 years of recorded yoga history are kind of like obscured to us, right? But as you go through the different time periods, there's kind of like there's distinct practices that end up popping up and being very popular, you know, especially in the Indus Valley, in India, and where all this yoga technology was developed. And Kundalini yoga, it kind of dates itself back to right around the turn of the 15th or the, I guess, the 16th century, like around 1500.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's very intertwined with Sikhism, which is now it's kind of considered, I guess, like a religious group.
Mm-hmm.
But if you'd asked a Sikh, you know, 400 years ago, is Sikhism a religion? They'd say no, you know, because it's more of a concept of like masonry, which was a big kind of cultural deal in our country for
masonry, the guys who make buildings.
Masonry, the guys who make buildings. So kind of.
I don't know anything about masonry or the Freemasons, or I do know that some religions have ripped off some of masonry stuff.
Oh, yeah. And that would be a good podcast.
Who has that one? Let's listen to it. What are your podcast recommendations?
What are mine?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's off topic. Let's get back to the Sikhism.
Oh, okay.
We're
How do you
this.
Spell that? It's like S-I-K.
S. Oh, God. You asked me to spell on air.
because the way it pronounces looks so different than how it's spelled.
S-I-K-H, unless I'm being dyslexic in my head and there's an H-K. Sikh.
Mm-hmm.
Sikh. Yeah. S-I-K-H, right? You're going to Google for me. Thanks. I'm too visual of a person.
S-I-K-H.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Sikhism is S-I-K-H-I-S-M.
Look at me.
And it says religion.
Right.
They adhere to Sikhism, a monotheistic religion that originated in the late 15th century in the Punjab region of India.
Yeah, look at that.
God, you're so good. You know your stuff.
So I have this conversation often with people these days about religion and what religion meant in India in the 15 or 16 or 17 or 1800s, right? Because it was very different. It was very different, and even still is quite a bit different than what religion is to us here in the West, right?
Mm.
Religion is not nearly, or was not nearly, as mutually exclusive as it is here. You know, people may have considered themselves like to be Sikh, and maybe even also to be Muslim, or to be Sikh and to practice like Hinduism. There was a lot of crossover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was
interesting.
There was an idea of truth and eternity, and maybe the closest thing we might have to express the idea of like God or whatever. But there wasn't as much division, at least until the Britons kind of came in and made these different groups say, okay, you got to be one group or another because your land rights are going to depend on what religion you are.
Oh my gosh.
You know, so.
Cool.
There's been a lot of outside influence. Anyway, so Kundalini yoga. Kundalini yoga.
Is what?
Kundalini yoga.
Should I Google it?
No, don't Google it. I could do this okay. one. I could do this one. Yeah. I'll share what it is, then I'll tell a little about the history.
Great.
Okay. And these are all things that I'm studying deeply and are kind of new to me too, you know?
Awesome.
Over the past like 8 or 9 months.
I'm very intrigued.
So Kundalini yoga is a form of yoga that that really works to strengthen the nervous system of the body, okay? It works to kind of attune you to a frequency or vibration that's a little more like eternal.
Interesting.
Yeah, like the underlying power of the universe, the thing that holds atoms together or whatever, you know?
Ooh.
And in Kundalini, you do that through a number of different practices. You know, there's movement. There's asana or posture that would be similar to what you see in maybe a hot yoga class or other vinyasa classes. There's meditation. There's also lots of mantra, of chanting or singing phrases in repetition that are meant to create, you know, vibration in the body, like that feeling that you get when you...
Do you have a favorite phrase right now?
A favorite phrase right now? No.
Okay.
Nothing comes to mind immediately for a favorite phrase right now.
Favorite mantra?
Favorite mantra. We'll talk about some mantras maybe in a bit, but I don't know that I have a favorite right now.
Okay.
That's a good question. In like my mental bullet point list of what Kundalini is, I lost track of where I was, but that's okay.
I like what you said about your vibration and frequency attuning to an eternal frequency. What's like another way you could say an eternal frequency, like a higher frequency, a positive frequency?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, what's another word for that?
Yeah.
The ultimate frequency. I don't know.
Well, you know, I've been doing a lot of thinking about a pretty simple question over the past 8 or 9 months, which is, why do we practice yoga?
Uh-huh.
Why do we practice yoga? Like, why?
Every person's different.
Every person's different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, in yoga philosophy, though, there's answers. There's answers to why we practice yoga. And, you know, I've been studying a lot of the different texts, a lot of different commentaries on things like the Yoga Sutras. And often when you get a commentary about the Yoga Sutras, like they'll say, people ask us to compare like yoga philosophy to modern psychology. And people say, we won't do it. Because modern psychology is still being developed, but yoga is considered complete.
Is it?
It has been in the past.
According to who?
According to a number of people over time.
And when they say it's complete, they mean there's no additions coming. There's no editing going on.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I mean, you can look at different markers in yoga history, and all of a sudden, you know, there's documentation to say, okay, we now have yoga.
The complete works of yoga.
We now have yoga.
From the last 4,000 years. Amazing.
Sure. Or from the past 2,000 years or 1,000 years, depending on where you are in time.
Mm.
But they're all just different threads that end up getting woven together.
Where are you in time?
Where are you in time?
I have no idea. I had a really weird dream this morning. I was half awake and I was in bed. Like, I knew I was in bed. And then suddenly I was very aware that I was driving my car to work. And I was sitting in traffic and I look out the window and I was like, that's a beautiful mountain. And in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, if I was dreaming right now, I could just imagine I'm flying up out of this car and going to the top of this mountain over here because that is such a beautiful sunrise. And then suddenly I wake up and I'm in my bed again. And I was like, oh, huh, I was dreaming. But then my body was paralyzed and I started to panic and I was... And the way that I trigger myself to physically wake up when I'm awake but my body isn't awake is by doing pranayama. But I didn't really think of it. I just start hyperventilating because then I know my dog will hear it and then he'll start touching my body, which will help me wake up.
That's great.
So where am I in time? I was just in a crazy, weird dream world. And then it was so confusing waking up in my bed being like, I thought I was sleeping and then I thought I was driving to work and I don't know what day it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Where are you in time? you ask the deep questions. I asked an easier question. Why do we do yoga? You asked, where are we in time?
Well, I feel like you brought it up. And I want to say, thinking about time makes me think about dreaming, which has no time reference. And then when you say something like thousands of years of yoga, I'm actually, maybe I'm watching this show called The 12 Monkeys on Hulu.
Yeah.
Based off of that crazy movie. And he is a time traveler and he's trying to go back in time and stop this plague from happening. So very relevant. And so with him time traveling so much, he's like, remember back when I was in the future and back when I was like in 1987, but I hadn't done that yet because other people are telling. Anyway, it's not making sense the way I describe it. You'd have to see the show. But it's been making me think about time being so relative.
You'll need to add that show to the description of this podcast.
Really?
Sure.
12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys. So you had a question about frequency.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question about why do we do yoga?
Mm-hmm.
And you had a question about where are we in time?
So
let's start answering the questions.
Okay.
All the questions.
Okay. So why do you do yoga?
Why do I do yoga?
Uh-huh.
I do yoga because of a certain like feeling I have inside.
Okay.
From working through the practice. Yeah. And that feeling, I could describe it in lots of different ways. But especially this year, and not just this year, the past like 8 months or 9 months, right? I've been diving deep into like a morning sadhana practice, like a devotional practice that I do, and it includes different meditations and things, and helps me feel that. You can't see what I'm doing with my hands on the podcast, but it's like I'm bringing my hands into like a line in front. Like I feel like aligned to myself.
Mm.
You know, I feel like I'm standing upright. That's the best words I can put because it's a feeling I have inside my body, inside like the feeling part of my body, like where I feel
like physical
emotions.
Like physical sensations? No, emotional sensations. Is that what you're saying?
Physical and emotional sensations. Yeah, it's like okay. A steadiness. It's a steadiness that I feel because of it.
Where does spirituality come into play for you? Because I consider you a spiritual person.
Mm.
And that's something that I'm not really.
You say that often.
Uh-huh.
And I always disagree with you in my mind when you say it.
Which always surprises me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we had a conversation about maybe sacred experiences,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. And I think we've both had what we consider sacred experiences. I don't know. Where does spirituality come in for me? Like, I think it's wrapped around that idea of like, you know, there's a thing I hold sacred because I've experienced it and I know that there's some truth there, but it might be hard to articulate.
So do you consider yoga and meditation a sacred practice for you?
A sacred practice. It's definitely a spiritual practice. I've definitely had sacred experiences.
Mm.
Yeah. And I would want to like protect it, you know, protect it. Yeah.
Okay. For me, why do I practice yoga? I was talking to a friend last night and I had mentioned that yoga is kind of a big deal for me. And he's like, what? Okay. So explain that. And originally when I started practicing yoga, it was because of how it helped me process my thoughts and how it seemed to alleviate guilt. And I was really intrigued by the peaceful feeling at the end during Shavasana and meditation. Like that was a very intriguing sensation for me. And it was very intriguing for me to have these types of realizations where I started to acknowledge that there was a narrative in my mind and that it was a narrative that was not helping me at all. And then I started to question it and start to see myself as more as the observer outside of the narrative and the thoughts. And so that was pretty interesting. Then I was able to create a new narrative and see how that served me. And that was fascinating. And so fast forward to now where it's kind of a big deal for me. It's because there's all these new elements to it, such as I do it for work, for a living. I now am creating a container for other people to experience yoga, whatever that sensation may be, if it's going to be a spiritual practice for them or just like a really cool sweaty workout for them, however they intend to use it. And so why I practice yoga now is kind of multifaceted, because I want to do it because it makes my body feel good. It makes me feel good mentally and emotionally. And even if it brings up stuff or makes me process anxiety, which I feel like I deal with a bunch, that's a reason. But there's this whole weird element of I'm doing it to become better in my career. So that's kind of a unique twist of it.
Yeah.
Where I start to think about it differently in terms of sequencing and creating a mood and an experience. And then there's that nuance, that thing you can't really touch that's about it. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And then how do I market it to people who I think would be interested in this type of experience? So that it's a whole pie, and there's so many pieces, and I feel like I have all these little pieces of the pie. However, the whole spiritual practice thing is a little eluding for me.
Well, you even just said there's that little bit that you can't really touch.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Well, no, but you know it's there.
There's something mystical there that I find very fascinating.
So, yoga philosophy, right? Especially historically and now, you know, it definitely says there's an ends to this whole thing that we're doing, right? Which is enlightenment.
Nirvana?
Enlightenment.
Is enlightenment and nirvana one and the same or no?
Different traditions.
Because nirvana is like a Hindu thing and that's where you go. And enlightenment is enlightenment.
So a lot of yoga predates a lot of Hinduism.
Okay.
Right? And so if you really want to get to it, you go even further back, and yoga is a pathway to enlightenment. You know, and you were talking about like maybe there's like these markers in time when there's a documented like, okay, well, this is yoga. Like one of those that we have is the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. People who have been in my slow flow classes in the past couple of months have been talking a lot about the Yoga Sutras, and Patanjali kind of like lays out a system, and he does it in like 195 or 196 little phrases. They're meant to be memorized. They're written down in Sanskrit, but then they're memorized by the teacher, and the teacher like recites a couple of these like short aphorisms, or like one liners, you know, and then like talks about them for an hour or two or something.
Awesome.
And, in the very beginning is all about this allegory, which what you were just describing really reminds me of it. And he talks about the waves in the mind, the mind waves, the thought waves, you know, and how those thought waves are very similar to like the ripples in a pond. That when there are no ripples, you can see to the bottom clearly. When there's lots of ripples, like it muddies things up and the water is murky, you can't see to the bottom. You know, and we, our true selves, in yoga philosophy, our true selves, like the real part of us that's us, is that bottom, the bottom part.
Beautiful.
Then there's the water, there's the ripples, there can be the muddiness and all that. And all that's like our bodies and our conditioning and the anxiety that you feel and all that stuff that's really, really like temporal, your body, you know, physical and temporary, you know. And so the sutras will go on to talk about, well, you want to calm those waves, and there's lots of techniques to do that, you know. And some of the benefits we feel in yoga practice of like, well, the brain calms, the anxiety passes. There's lots of techniques to get there. Even Patanjali, he goes through like so many things. He's like, so meditate. You can meditate on this or that, another thing. And he's like, in the end, it doesn't matter what you meditate on, anything, you know?
Do you think that the bottom of the pond is really just consciousness minus the temporal, like your conditioning, your social conditioning, your whatever label you slap on yourself, your family, your politics, your gender? Is it just consciousness at the end of that?
I think the word that's more common would be awareness.
Awareness.
Awareness. That would be the word more commonly used, be awareness. Yeah. Your awareness. And you have awareness, and you know,
Your dog, very psychedelic for me.
Your dog, Willie Nelson Mandela, has awareness. And in yogic philosophy, like this fake tree next to me, it also has awareness. But it's just given a different vehicle to experience the world through than your awareness is.
Amazing.
And in yogic philosophy, that's where like these ideas that later get really developed and like reincarnation and stuff really come from. You know, it's like, well, what does it mean if that awareness never goes away? Like, where does it go?
What?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah.
If it never goes away, even after.
If it persists. Like this is a big part of like our yoga history and yoga philosophy.
I'm going to take a little dark turn right now.
Let's get dark.
Okay. So warning.
Dark yogi rises.
Warning. I'm going to talk about suicide for a second. I had a friend who attempted suicide when I was in high school.
I'm so sorry.
And he lived and he changed his life. However, due to the after effects of the way he chose to make that attempt, he had some weird health problems. I can't remember specifically. We lost touch. But he said he attempted to. Anyway, won't get into it. But he said that he felt like he saw his body. He saw his mom find him. He saw his mom attempt to resuscitate him. And then he said he started to go somewhere else and explore some other places. And he was very upset because he was trying to end it and he was still conscious. And that was very upsetting for him. So he thought, well, maybe I didn't do it right. And he kept trying to run to a building and jump off of this building. And then he was like, I'm still alive. And he's witnessing like weird experiences. So it sounds like he's dreaming or something. And the next thing he knows, he's in the hospital and he's awake and he's in recovery. And I remember having that conversation with him about awareness, consciousness. And he said that experience, though it was like very traumatic for him and his family, it made him start to change his life and think about the world and consciousness and death like so much differently. And it would set him on like a healthier path. So thoughts and ideas like that I have sometimes, which I feel like are kind of psychedelic and trippy and dark and cause me anxiety.
It feels dark to you.
Oh, yeah.
What part of it's dark for you?
I think I'm just like a small little creature and it's so beyond my scope of understanding. The idea of having awareness beyond life and what would that look and feel like? And that's scary. And so I don't know if I'm more scared of existing past death or not existing past death. Both of them terrify me. So then I avoid thinking about it or talking about it. But then I'm obviously talking about it right now. So
I would love to come back to that meditation that I experienced like over a decade ago toward the end of our time today, because you reminded me of an experience, you know? And so make sure you give me like a warning with like your finger, like we only got like 5 minutes or something.
Oh, okay.
I want to come back to it.
Okay.
Our awareness. So in yoga philosophy, you know, the whole intent of the practice and everything is to align the vibration or the frequency or the attunement of our awareness to an eternal frequency that carries on throughout the universe, so that when we die, our awareness can break out of the Earth's electromagnetic field and like rejoin this current that's always going on forever.
Okay.
How about that for trippy?
I just blacked out for a second.
I saw
did you see that?
Yeah. That was a lot. That was a lot.
Will you say that one more time?
It was trippy. I saw it.
I'm pretty sure like one of my eyes just like crossed for a second.
Y'all can't see this, but there's like a tear coming out of the left eye.
The left eye is like freaking out.
It's like wigging out.
It's like when a robot is asked a question that it's impossible for it to understand and then the robot explodes. Like something like that just happened. Will you say that one more time?
Sure. Yeah. 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 And I'll be honest, these are difficult concepts for me to try to articulate, but they're things that I've felt. during like some of these deep meditations too. Mm-hmm. Like I've heard them expressed to me. I've meditated on them. I've experienced them. And yeah, it is a little trippy. Maybe that's the best word we have for
that's
it.
That's the only word I really have for it. Yeah. It's psychedelic. It's trippy.
Okay. So let's rewind. Can you make a rewind sound? Oh, that's great. So Patanjali in his sutras has this allegory of a pond, right? And the and the waves and everything. And if you can calm the waves, calm the anxiety, which by the way, the waves also make these scars along the outside of the pond called samskaras.
Mm.
And that's kind of cool. They end up being like our habitual habits or tendencies. Mm-hmm. We could talk about that. That's a cool one. But you calm the waves, you can see to the bottom, and there at the bottom, you find your awareness. You find your true identity, you know? And when you're in touch with that, it suddenly shifts your perspective on the whole, I don't know, life thing,
okay.
The whole existence thing. Mm-hmm. It reminds me maybe a bit of your friend who it sounds like had a, it's like he was in a really painful place and ended up having this experience and everything.
Oh, I forgot to mention the last part of his experience was like, you know, trying to run from this pain and escape, and he couldn't. And then he finally had a moment where he was accepting what was happening around him, and then he said he felt overwhelming love and peace surround him, and that's when he woke up in the hospital.
Mm.
And so he said he felt like there's something else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's we know there's things we can't see. Like we know there's some energy holding up this coffee table in front of us.
Okay.
Like we've learned it's made of atoms. We've learned that somehow they're all held together. We've learned there's like energy stuff, mm-hmm. right? And I don't know. I guess we kind of accept that because like electron microscope showed up those weird photos. God, yes. Please no. We just kind of accept that on maybe a secular form of faith or whatever, you know. But we can also experience it, like we press on it and have this physical, tactile experience with it. Yeah, I think that some of these other things you can also experience too, but you have to perceive them a little differently.
Mm.
So you got the pond, you got the bottom of the pond, you know, it's your awareness. And the idea that whatever that awareness is really made of, you know, that it has existed before and will keep existing. And that it's made of the same stuff as all the other cosmic radiation and energy out there, which it's really, you know, meant mm-hmm. to be a part of.
I always like the idea and the visual of the visual of the ocean being that, and then we are a one drop in the ocean, and then we're just returning to the ocean.
Oh yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
I think there's a Rumi quote about something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, maybe to depart from Patanjali or whatever, and talk about your friend. Like, what were the things I think you said love. I think I remembered he said love. Or
he said he felt loved and he felt comforted and he felt like he had felt the feeling of peace.
Yeah.
And he was glad to come back into his body.
You know, there are these concepts that end up being quite universal. And I think love is a great word to describe that frequency.
Mm.
Like what is it raising the frequency? I don't know. But maybe a good word for it is love.
I feel like it's a good reason to live.
Yeah. Yeah. And not like the love that like really needs anything from anybody else.
Gross.
But the love that's
but we need love.
Connecting.
Like I need the love of my dog.
How would you wake up?
He woke me up from a scary dream. God bless him.
You know, I mean, every culture has kind of come to a lot of these same conclusions. And some of the methods to get there have been really similar. I mean, you and I, this past weekend, we were in a yin yoga class. Where does yin yoga come from? Where does it come from? You know, yin yoga has like very little to do with it. I mean, yin yoga comes from China. You know, it's a combination of like Taoism and some other ideas that were brought together in the 70s. It's like, okay, now we have yin yoga, you know. But there were traditions there that were trying to get at the same thing, trying to get at the same kind of attunement or alignment, the thing that makes you feel peaceful. And that peacefulness, it's like, what do you call it? Do you call it love? Do you call it awareness or something?
I mean, we call it corpse pose. And I feel like that's when you're in Shavasana and you're so relaxed that you accept the fact that you're going to die. And isn't that what all religions are, is finding acceptance for death?
Mm.
I know that's kind of an issue for me. I don't know if anyone else has an issue like thinking about dying.
Yeah, something came up for you there, Christina. You want to dig into that?
I should probably get back to therapy or something. I don't know. What did you want me to remind you of? I said something and it reminded you of your meditation and you wanted me to give you a reminder.
So I found that Kundalini yoga is extremely powerful in creating shifts in your inner life. When you feel that something is out of whack, or that feeling that something's off, or you're feeling very anxious, or like Kundalini yoga is an approach to working with this physical body and our daily lives, right? To really feel aligned inside yourself, strengthen your nervous system, or however you want to describe it, so that moving through life feels better, for one. Or if you want to dig deeper into like the philosophy stuff, like you're attuning your awareness. You
how
know?
Do you lean more into the philosophy? Do you lean in more into balancing your nervous system?
Do I lean more?
Or here's a better question. What have you noticed in terms of your nervous system with this prolonged practice you've been doing every day?
Yeah, yeah. So we are very complicated biological systems, right? And I think we talked about this a little like last time on the podcast. We are the beneficiaries of thousands of years of yogis who were living an ascetic lifestyle, who went off and like got rid of all their possessions and meditated on like one chakra or part of their body for the rest of their life. We're the beneficiaries of all this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we can use that if we like dig into it to be healthy, to be happy, and to also have like a sense of spirituality, you know, to be like holiness or something, you know. So I had this experience with this meditation, which I now know is called the Kirtan Kriya, a little over 10 years ago. And afterward, I tried to reproduce it for myself. Like I tried to like remember what the thing was. And I'll describe Kirtan Kriya really quick. So in Kirtan Kriya, this meditation, it lasts sometimes somewhere between 11 minutes and like 31 minutes, right? And you sit there. You sit there with your legs crossed and you sit nice and tall like you're meditating, and you shut in, you close your eyes, and there's a mudra. So there's something you do with your hands, what mudra is, right? And you touch your thumb and your index together, and then you alternate from your thumb to your middle finger, and then your ring finger, and then your pinky fingers.
With both hands,
yeah. You can see what I'm doing that can't. Thank you.
Yep.
And you keep doing that, okay? And that in itself.
At that rate, at that fast?
They can't see. I'll go in a second. And
slow.
As you are alternating between your fingers, you also sing the mantra. Mm. Sa ta na ma. Mm. You chant. Okay. Okay, so sa ta na ma, sa ta na ma. Normally you do it kind of like a Mary had a little lamb up and down kind of thing.
Mm.
Okay. And you do that for, if you're doing this meditation for 12 minutes, you would do that for 2 minutes out loud. Then you do it for 2 minutes silently in your head. And then you do, sorry, I said that wrong. 2 minutes out loud, then 2 minutes whispering, and then 2 minutes silently in your head. And then you do it 2 minutes silently in your head, and then 2 minutes whispering, and then 2 minutes out loud. Mm. Does that make sense? So like mm-hmm. you're singing, you're whispering, you're silent. You're whispering, you're singing, right? And there's also a complicated like visualization. You're visualizing energy coming in through the top of your head and going out through your third eye. Okay. All these things going on. And it's really possible to do it wrong.
No.
Yeah. And And I tried to do this multiple times over the years. I was like, you know, I'm going to do this meditation. I'm going to like do it on a recurring basis. And it always took me to a dark place.
What?
It did. It always took me to a dark place. I would do it maybe every morning or something for 20 days. And I would have this huge anxiety or fear of like non-existence. And you and I have talked about this before.
Yes. You
know? Yeah. Yeah.
So why was that happening?
Well,
is that part of it, accepting?
And I've talked to my teacher, Mantra Simran, Mary Baker here in the Valley about it. And I think a big part of it is I wasn't doing it properly. Two, there are kind of these specific formulas in many lineages of yoga, but especially in Kundalini, where you do certain things to kind of like protect your energetic self. And when you do a meditation like this, you should always do it like a proper tune-in, where you have a mantra that helps kind of like align the energy in your body through a little bit of chant to
so that would be done it. Before the
do it before yeah
oh my gosh yeah. Interesting.
I wouldn't have time to talk about all like that formulaic stuff, but like there's a reason these elements are combined together the way they are. They're meant to create an effect in the body, and again, hundreds or thousands of years to develop some of these approaches to like working with the body and the glandular system and the nervous system, and help you feel that like alignment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When do you graduate from your Kundalini training?
Yeah, so I hope to have all of my requirements, and there are a lot of requirements this spring. There's a lot more. So this Kundalini training that I'm taking, it's a level one KRI, Kundalini Research Institute certification. It's a 200-hour certification. But my experience with it so far is it has been much more work than my previous 200-hour certification.
Yeah, the first 200 hours is always intro level.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so... I hope to complete this spring, and I hope to start offering some Kundalini classes here.
What other offerings would you like to offer in the future?
So you say that with a smile. They can't see your smile. So I've had a fun time the past couple of months talking with you and kind of talking about different things that I hope to offer. And our world is speeding up, you know, all the time. We see that with technology. We constantly want these like little hits of dopamine with our logging into social media and everything. And we see that reflected like everywhere. And one thing I'm concerned about is the speeding up even of a yoga practice.
Mm.
And so I'm trying to think about offerings where we can like slow down, just take a deep breath for a minute and really consider, you know, like we talked about a lot on this podcast, yeah. Probably too much.
We talk too much.
Maybe we could have like talked about less.
Podcasts are all about talking.
That's true. But it would have been fun to sit in silence. So, so yeah, I think a lot about how can we have experiences with yoga that intentionally slow us down, intentionally like help build awareness. My experience with a yoga practice is as you're able to slow down and really spend time with the things that come to the surface, those things that come to the surface, they dissolve more quickly.
So for you, when you said you were practicing improperly and you suddenly would go to a dark place thinking about not existing, would you say that's something that came to the surface that you needed to work through?
I think it's probably a little more complicated than that, but I do think that that's part of it.
Mm.
Like I have recently revisited that meditation. And I worked through 40 days of doing it, you know,
wow.
Every morning. I combined it with some other practices too. And I had my own kind of sacred experience with it.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And I didn't go to the same dark place, which is interesting, you know. Another thing I'm really curious about, really hopeful for, is that things I offer can be really practical. And I tell especially last night I was with my slow flow class, and I tell them that like every class I want you to take something away from here that feels really practical. You're taking something into your life so that yoga could be a thing that makes life a little bit smoother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So right now, that's a slow flow class on Wednesday nights. It's a hot hour for awareness class, where we take a hot hour class a little slower and talk about a certain posture theme and plug for Heather Sellers. Oh, actually, this class will already have happened by the time this comes out. That's too bad. I have a wonderful yoga teacher and friend, Heather Sellers, is subbing that class tomorrow because I'm in a training weekend, and she's going to talk about Drishti, which is going to be super cool. Mm. So, and, you know, I hope to offer more, we'll offer Kundalini for sure.
Yes.
And other experiences like Yoga Nidra and
oh, yeah. So that's coming up in March, your Yoga Nidra event with Shelley. I'm so excited. I have a friend visiting from out of town. And I'm like, she was going to leave on the 20th. I'm like, you can't. You have to stay on the 20th. We're doing Yoga Nidra on the equinox.
Yeah. We want to stay true to like the tradition of what Yoga Nidra is. But we feel a real strong pull toward a certain way of presenting it. And we're really excited for what's gonna happen. It'll be March 20th for those of you who hear this before then. 2022.
Yeah, Boise folks, if you're in town.
Boise folks, if you're in town. Or if you're from out of town and want to visit for a Yoga Nidra.
Mm-hmm. March 20th.
Spring equinox. Be here.
Great. I have to ask you, what have you overheard at yoga?
I have to put you on the spot because you overheard something at yoga you should share about.
I did.
I heard that your heart chakra was showing.
I've heard a couple things. So one of them was I got a bloody nose, and Laura Hunt was walking in and she's like, oh no, your heart chakra's coming out of your nose. That was really funny. Super cute. I heard something else that was also hysterical, but I can't remember right now. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, write this down for the podcast. And I don't know if I, oh wait, yes, here it is. I did write it down. Ah, I'm so good sometimes. Who told me this? Oh my gosh, there's this wonderful woman who's been taking my classes. And she's a school teacher and she's a mom. And I think she works so hard. And she's so sweet to me. She says, Christina, you have no idea how much your classes have been helping me. And that is like food for my soul. This is why I love yoga, is hearing that I'm benefiting someone else. It makes it so meaningful for me. And she came in the other day and she's like, I have to share this with you. She says, not only are you changing my life, but you're affecting my children, because she said she was pausing, taking a deep breath, and her 2-year-old asked her, why are you breathing like that? And she told her 2-year-old daughter, she says, well, sometimes mommy needs to take a deep breath. I can't remember why, but she's like, I had a feel like I've just been having these feelings and they make me need to take a deep breath. And so then after she tells her daughter this, the 2-year-old says that she has to also take a deep breath. And it wasn't in the same moment. It was like later, like the next day or something. And she goes, Mom, I need to take a deep breath. I thought that was so cute. So
I love that.
So that's what I've overheard at yoga recently. You got me.
Well, thank you for having me on today.
You're so welcome. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I feel like I should make an announcement. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, thank you. Feel free to check me out on Instagram, overheard@.yoga, if that makes sense. Send me your overheard at yoga story. I'd love to hear it. We'd love to share it on the pod. And if you're interested in my fly fishing and yoga retreat coming up this summer in Eastern Oregon, those dates are June 9th through the 12th. And they are listed on my Instagram page, Xtina Yoga or Xtina Yogini, which is linked to my overheard thing. So check it out. And that's it. Bye, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Leave me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and I want to hear from you. Please send me your overheard at yoga stories. Tell me about your yoga journey, what you love about your home studio, or the funny thing you overheard at yoga. Find me on Instagram at overheardat.yoga to submit. There are so many different styles of yoga and opinions about yoga.
but the one thing I've seen in all my travels to different studios is yoga brings a community together. Namaste.